before her. She smirked at him. Insufferable woman. Bah! Kaladin left her and hiked across the rough ground to join Bridge 4, where he insisted on taking a turn hauling the bridge despite Teft's protests that he was above that sort of thing now. He was no storming light eyes. He'd never be above doing an honest day's work. The familiar weight of the bridge settled onto his shoulders. Rock was right. It did feel lighter than it once had. He smiled as he heard cursing from Lopin's cousins, who, like Renarin, were being initiated on this run into their first bridge carry. They hiked the bridge over a chasm, crossing on one of Dalinar's larger, less mobile ones, and started across the plateau. For a time, marching at the front of Bridge 4, Kaladin could imagine that his life was simple. No plateau assaults, no arrows, no assassins or bodyguarding. Just him, his team, and a bridge. Unfortunately, as they neared the other side of the large plateau, he started to feel weary and, by reflex, tried to suck in some stormlight to bolster him. It wouldn't come. Life was not simple. It never had been, certainly not while running bridges. To pretend otherwise was to paint over the past. He helped set the bridge down, then, noticing the vanguard moving out in front of the army, he and the bridgemen shoved their bridge into place across the chasm. The vanguard cheerfully welcomed the chance to get ahead, marching over the bridge and securing the next plateau. Kaladin and the others followed, then, a half hour later, they let the vanguard onto the next plateau. They continued like that for a time, waiting for Dalinar's bridge to arrive before crossing, then leading the vanguard onto the next plateau. Hours passed. Sweaty, muscle-straining hours. Good hours. Kaladin didn't come to any realizations about the king or his place in the man's potential assassination, but for the moment he carried his bridge and enjoyed the progress of an army moving toward their goal beneath an open sky. As the day grew long, they approached the target plateau, where the hollowed-out chrysalis awaited Shallan's study. Kaladin and Bridge 4 let the vanguard across as they'd been doing, then settled in to wait. Eventually, the bulk of the army approached, and Dalinar's lumbering bridges moved into position, ratcheting down to span the chasm. Kaladin gulped deeply of warm water as he watched. He washed his face with the water, then wiped his brow. They were getting close. This plateau was far out onto the plains, almost to the tower itself. Getting back would take hours, assuming they moved at the same relaxed speed they had taken getting out here. It would be well after dark when they returned to the war camps. If Dalinar does want to assault the center of the shattered plains, Kaladin thought, it will take days of marching, all the while exposed on the plateaus, with the potential of being surrounded and cut off from the war camps. The Weeping would make a great chance for that. 4 straight weeks of rain, but no high storms. This was the off-year, when there wouldn't even be a high storm on light day in the middle, part of the 1,000-day cycle of 2 years that made up a full storm rotation. Still, he knew that many Alethi patrols had tried exploring eastward before. They'd all been destroyed by high storms, chasm fiends, or Barshendi assault teams. Nothing short of an all-out, full-on movement of resources toward the center would work. An assault that would leave Dalinar, and whoever came with him, isolated. Dalinar's bridge thumped down into place. Kaladin's men traversed their own bridge and prepared to pull it across to go move the vanguard. Kaladin crossed, then waved them on ahead of him. He walked over to where the larger bridge had settled down. Dalinar was crossing it while walking with one of his scouts, all vaulters, with servants behind carrying long poles. "I want you to spread out," the High Prince said to them. "We won't have much time before we need to head back. I want a survey of as many plateaus as you can see from here. The more of our route we can plan now, the less time we'll have to waste during the actual assault." The scouts nodded, saluting as he dismissed them. He stepped off the bridge and nodded to Kaladin. Behind them, Dalinar's generals, scribes, and engineers crossed the bridge. They'd be followed by the bulk of the army and finally the rear guard. "I hear you've been building mobile bridges, sir," Kaladin said. You realize those mechanical ones are too slow for your assault, I assume? Delinar nodded.
But I will have soldiers carry them. No need for your men to do so.
Sir, that is thoughtful of you, but I don't think you have to worry. The bridge crews will carry for you if ordered. Many of them will probably welcome the familiarity.
I thought you and your men considered assignment to those bridge crews a death sentence, soldier, Delinar said.
The way Sadeus ran them, it was. You could do a better job. Armored men, trained in formations, running the bridges. Soldiers marching in front with shields. Archers with instructions to defend the bridge crews. Besides, the danger is only for an assault.
Delinar nodded.
Prepare the crews, then. Having your men on the bridges will free the soldiers in case we get attacked.
He started to walk across the plateau, but one of the carpenters on the other side of the chasm called to him. Delinar turned and started to cross the bridge again. He passed officers and scribes crossing the bridge, including Adolin and Shallan, who walked side by side. She'd given up on the palanquin, and he had given up on his horse, and she seemed to be explaining to him about the hidden remnants of a structure she'd found inside that rock earlier. Behind them, on the other side of the chasm, stood the worker who had called Delinar back across.
It's that same carpenter, Kaladin thought, the stout man with the cap and the birthmark. Where have I seen him?
It clicked. Sadeus's lumberyards. The man had been one of the carpenters there overseeing the construction of bridges. Kaladin started running. He was charging toward the bridge before the connection fully solidified in his mind. Ahead of him, Adolin spun immediately and started running, searching for whatever danger Kaladin had spotted. He left a bewildered Shallan standing in the bridge's center. Kaladin approached her in a rush. The carpenter grabbed a lever on the side of the bridge contraption.
"The carpenter, Adolin!" Kaladin screamed. "Stop that man!"
Delinar still stood on the bridge. The High Prince had been distracted by something else.
What?
Kaladin realized he had heard something too. Horns. The call that the enemy had been spotted. It happened all in an instant. Delinar turning toward the horns, the carpenter pulling the lever, Adolin in his glimmering shard plate reaching for Delinar. The bridge lurched. Then, it collapsed. 69. Nothing.
Rays is captive. He cannot leave the system he now inhabits. His destructive potential is therefore inhibited. As the bridge fell out from beneath him, Kaladin reached for Stormlight. Nothing. Panic surged through him. His stomach dropped and he tumbled into the air. The fall into the darkness of the chasm was a brief moment, but also an eternity. He caught a glimpse of Shallan and several men in blue uniforms falling and flailing in terror. Like a drowning man struggling toward the surface, Kaladin thrashed for the Stormlight. He would not die this way. The sky was his. The winds were his. The chasms were his. He would not.
Syl screamed, a terrified, painful sound that vibrated Kaladin's very bones. In that moment he got a breath of Stormlight, life itself. He crashed into the ground at the bottom of the chasm, and all went black. Swimming through pain. The pain washed over him, a liquid, but did not get inside. His skin kept it out.
"What have you done?"
The distant voice sounded like rumbling thunder. Kaladin gasped and opened his eyes, and the pain crawled inside. Suddenly, his entire body hurt. He lay on his back, staring upward at a streak of light in the sky.
Syl? No. No, that was sunlight.
The opening at the top of the chasm, high above him. This far out onto the shattered plains, the chasms here were hundreds of feet deep. Kaladin groaned and sat up. That strip of light seemed impossibly distant. He'd been swallowed by the darkness, and the chasm nearby was shadowed, obscure. He put a hand to his head.
"I got some Stormlight right at the end," he thought. "I survived. But that scream..."
It haunted him, echoing in his mind.
It sounded too much like the scream he'd heard when touching the duelist's shard blade in the arena.
"Check for wounds,"
his father's teachings whispered from the back of his mind. The body could go into shock with a bad break or wound and not notice the damage that had been done. He went through the motions of checking his limbs for breaks and did not reach for any of the spheres in his pouch. He didn't want to light the gloom and potentially face the dead around him. Was Dalinar among them? Adolin had been running toward his father. Had the prince managed to get Dalinar before the bridge collapsed? He'd been wearing plate and had jumped at the end. Kaladin felt at his legs, then his ribs. He found aches and scrapes, but nothing broken or ripped. That stormlight he'd held at the end, it had protected him, perhaps even healed him before running out. He finally reached into his pouch and fished out spheres, but found those all drained. He tried his pocket, then froze as he heard something scraping nearby. He leaped to his feet and spun, wishing he had a weapon. The chasm bottom grew brighter. A steady glow revealed fan-like frill blooms and draping vines on the walls, gathered twigs and moss on the floor in patches. Was that a voice? He felt a surreal moment of confusion as shadows moved on the wall ahead of him. Then someone wandered around the corner wearing a silk dress and carrying a pack over her shoulder. Shallan Devar. She screamed when she saw him, throwing the pack to the ground and stumbling backward, hands to her sides. She even dropped her sphere. Rolling his arm in its socket, Kaladin stepped closer into the light. "Calm down," he said. "It's me."
"Stormfather,"
Shallan said, scrambling to grab the sphere off the ground again. She stepped forward, thrusting the light toward him.
"It is you, the bridgeman. How?"
"I don't know," he lied, looking upward. "I've got a wicked crick in my neck and my elbow hurts like thunder. What happened?"
"Someone threw the emergency latch on the bridge."
"What emergency latch?"
"It topples the bridge into the chasm."
"Sounds like a storming stupid thing to have," Kaladin said, fishing in his pocket for his other spheres.
He glanced at them covertly. Also drained. Storms. He'd use them all?
"Depends," Shallan said. "What if your men have retreated over the bridge and enemies are pouring across it after you? The emergency latch is supposed to have some kind of safety lock, so it can't be thrown by accident, but you can release it in a hurry if you need to."
He grunted as Shallan shone her sphere past him toward where the two halves of the bridge were smashed into the ground of the chasm. There were the bodies he'd expected. He looked. He had to. No sign of Dalinar, though several of the officers and light-eyed ladies who'd been crossing the bridge lay in twisted, broken heaps on the ground. A drop of 200 feet or more did not leave survivors. Except Shallan. Kaladin didn't remember grabbing her as he fell, but he didn't remember much of that fall beyond Syl's scream. That scream. Well, he must have managed to grab Shallan by reflex, infusing her with stormlight to slow her fall. She looked disheveled, her blue dress scuffed and her hair a mess, but she was apparently otherwise unharmed.
"I woke up down here in the darkness," Shallan said. "It's been a while since we fell."
"How can you tell?"
"It's almost dark up there," Shallan said. "It will be night soon. When I woke, I heard the echoes of yelling. Fighting. I saw something glowing from around that corner. Turned out to be a soldier who had fallen. His sphere pouch ripped."
She shivered visibly.
"He'd been killed by something before the fall."
"Parshendi," Kaladin said. "Just before the bridge collapsed, I heard horns from the vanguard. We got attacked."
Damnation. That probably meant that Dalinar had retreated, assuming he'd actually survived. There was nothing worth fighting for out here.
"Give me one of those spheres," Kaladin said.
She handed one over, and Kaladin went searching among the fallen. For pulses, ostensibly, but really for any equipment or spheres.
"You think any of these might be alive?"
Shallan asked, voice sounding small in the otherwise silent chasm.
"Well, we survived somehow."
"How do you think that happened?"
Shallan said, looking upward toward the gap, far, far above.
I saw some windspren just before we fell, Kaladin said. I've heard folk tales of them protecting a person as he falls. Perhaps that's what happened.
Shallan went silent as he searched the bodies.
Yes, she finally said. That sounds logical.
She seemed convinced. Good. So long as she didn't start wondering about the stories told of Kaladin Stormblessed. Nobody else was alive, but he verified for certain that neither Dalinar nor Adolin were among the corpses.
I was a fool not to spot that an assassination attempt was coming, Kaladin thought.
Sadeas had tried hard to undermine Dalinar at the feast a few days back, with the revelation of the visions. It was a classic ploy. Discredit your enemy, then kill him, to make certain he didn't become a martyr. The corpses had little of value. A handful of spheres, some writing implements that Shallan greedily snatched up and stuffed into her satchel. No maps. Kaladin had no specific idea where they were, and with night imminent...
What do we do?
Shallan asked softly, staring at the darkened realm, with its unexpected shadows, its gently moving frills, vines, polyp-like staccatos, their tendrils out and wafting in the air. Kaladin remembered his first times down in this place, which always felt too green, too muggy, too alien. Nearby, two skulls peeked out from beneath the moss, watching. Splashing sounded from a distant pool, which made Shallan spin wildly. Though the chasms were a home to Kaladin now, he did not deny that at times they were distinctly unnerving.
It's safer down here than it seems, Kaladin said. During my time in Sadeas's army, I spent days upon days in the chasms, gathering salvage from the fallen. Just watch for Rotspren. And the chasm fiends?
Shallan asked, spinning to look in another direction as a kremling scuttled along the wall.
I never saw one.
Which was true, though he had seen a shadow of one once, scraping its way down a distant chasm. Even thinking of that day gave him chills.
They aren't as common as people claim. The real danger is high storms. You see, if it rains, even far away from here... Yes, flash flooding, Shallan said. Very dangerous in a slot canyon. I've read about them.
I'm sure that will be very helpful, Kaladin said. You mentioned some dead soldiers nearby? She pointed, and he strode in that direction. She followed, sticking close to his light. He found a few dead spearmen who had been shoved off the plateau above. The wounds were fresh. Just beyond them was a dead Parshendi, also fresh. The Parshendi man had uncut gems in his beard. Kaladin touched one, hesitated, then tried to draw the stormlight out. Nothing happened. He sighed, then bowed his head for the fallen before finally pulling a spear from underneath one of the bodies and standing up. The light above had faded to a deep blue. Night.
So, we wait? Shallan asked.
For what? Kaladin asked, raising the spear to his shoulder.
For them to come back.
She trailed off.
They're not coming back for us, are they?
They'll assume we're dead. Storms, we should be dead. We're too far out for a corpse recovery operation, I'd guess. That's doubly true since the Parshendi attacked. He rubbed his chin.
I suppose we could wait for Dalinar's major expedition. He was indicating he'd come this way, searching for the center. It's only a few days away, right?
Shallan paled. Well, she paled further. That light skin of hers was so strange. It and the red hair made her look like a very small horn eater.
Dalinar is planning to march just after the final high storm before the Weeping. That storm is close, and it will involve lots and lots and lots of rain.
Bad idea, then.
You could say so.
He tried to imagine what a high storm would be like down here. He had seen the after effects when salvaging with Bridge 4. The twisted, broken corpses, the piles of refuse crushed against walls and into cracks. Boulders as tall as a man casually washed through chasms
until they got wedged between two walls, sometimes 50 feet up in the air.
When? He asked. When is that high storm?
She stared at him, then dug into her satchel, flipping through sheets of paper with her free hand, while holding the satchel through the fabric of her safe hand. She waved him over with his sphere, as she had to tuck hers away. He held it up for her as she looked over a page with lines of script.
Tomorrow night, she said softly. Just after first moonset.
Kaladin grunted, holding up his sphere and inspecting the chasm.
We're just to the north of the chasm we fell from, he thought, so the way back should be that way.
All right, then,
Shallan said. She took a deep breath, then snapped her satchel closed.
We walk back and we start immediately.
You don't want to sit for a moment and catch your breath?
My breath is quite well caught, Shallan said. If it's all the same to you, I'd rather be moving. Once back, we can sit sipping mulled wine and laugh about how silly it was of us to hurry all that way, since we had so much time to spare. I'd like very much to feel that foolish. You?
Yeah. He liked the chasms. It didn't mean he wanted to risk a high storm in one of them. You don't have a map in that satchel, do you?
No, Shallan said with a grimace. I didn't bring my own. Brightness Velat has the maps. I was using hers. But I might be able to remember some of what I've seen.
Then I think we should go this way, Kaladin said, pointing. He started walking.
The bridge man started walking off in the direction he'd pointed, not even giving her a chance to state her opinion on the matter. Shallan kept a huff to herself, snatching up her pack. She'd found some waterskins on the soldiers, and satchel. She hurried after him, her dress catching on something she hoped was a very white stick. The tall bridgeman deftly stepped over and around debris, eyes forward. Why did he have to be the one who survived? Though, to be honest, she was pleased to find anyone. Walking down here alone would not have been pleasant. At least he was superstitious enough to believe that he'd been saved by some twist of fate and Spren. She had no idea how she'd saved herself, let alone him. Pattern rode on her skirts, and before she'd found the bridge man, he'd been speculating that the Stormlight had kept her alive. Alive after a fall of at least 200 feet? It only proved how little she knew about her abilities. Stormfather. She'd saved this man, too. She was sure of it. He'd been falling right beside her as they plummeted. But how? And could she figure out how to do it again? She hurried to keep up with him, blasted Alethi and their freakishly long legs. He marched like a soldier, giving no thought to how she had to pick her way more carefully than he did. She didn't want to get her skirt caught on every branch they passed. They reached a pool of water on the chasm floor, and he hopped up onto a log that bridged the water, barely breaking stride as he crossed. She stopped at the edge. He looked back at her, holding up a sphere. You aren't going to demand I give you my boots again, are you? She raised a foot, revealing the military-style boots she wore underneath her dress. That got him to cock an eyebrow. I wasn't about to come out onto the shattered plains in slippers, she said, blushing. Besides, nobody can see your shoes under a dress this long. She regarded the log. You want me to help you across? He asked. Actually, I'm wondering how the trunk of a stumpweight tree got here, she confessed. They can't possibly be native to this area of the Shattered Plains. Too cold out here. It might have grown along the coast, but a high storm really carried it that far? 400 miles? You're not going to demand we stop for you to sketch a picture, are you? Oh, please, Shallan said, stepping up onto the log and picking her way across. Do you know how many sketches I have of stump weights? The other things down here were a different matter entirely. As they continued on their way, Shallan used her sphere, which she had to juggle in her free hand, trying to manage it along with the satchel in her safe hand and the pack over her shoulder, to illuminate her surroundings. They were stunning. Dozens of different varieties of vines, frill blooms of red, orange, and violet, tiny rock buds on the walls, and haspers in little clusters, opening and closing their shells as if breathing. Motes of lifespren drifted around a patch of shale bark that grew in knobby patterns like fingers. You almost never saw that formation above. The tiny glowing specks of green light drifted through the chasm toward an entire wall of fist-sized tube plants with little feelers wiggling out the top. As Shallan passed, the feelers retracted in a wave running up the wall. She gasped softly and took a memory. The bridge man stopped ahead of her, turning. "Well, don't you even notice how beautiful it is?" He looked up at the wall of tube plants. She was certain she'd read about those somewhere, but the name escaped her. The bridge man continued on his way. Shallan jogged after him, pack thumping against her back. She almost tripped over a snarled pile of dead vines and sticks as she reached him. She cursed, hopping on one foot to stay upright before steadying herself. He reached out and took the pack from her. "Finally," she thought. "Thank you." He grunted, slipping it over his shoulder before continuing on without another word. They reached a crossroads in the chasms, a path going right and another going left. They'd have to weave around the next plateau before them to continue westward. Shallan looked up at the rift, getting a good picture in her mind of how this side of the plateau looked, as Kaladin chose one of the paths. "This is going to take a while," he said. "Even longer than it took to get out here. We had to wait upon the whole army then, but we could also cut through the centers of the plateaus. Having to go around every one of them will add a lot to the trip."
"Well, at least the companionship is pleasant," he eyed her. "For you, I mean," she added.
"Am I going to have to listen to you prattle all the way back?"
"Of course not," she said. "I also intend to do some blathering, a little nattering, and the occasional gibber, but not too much, lest I overdo a good thing."
"Great."
"I've been practicing my burble," she added.
"I just can't wait to hear."
"Oh, well, that was it, actually." He studied her, those severe eyes of his boring into her own. She turned away from him. He didn't trust her, obviously. He was a bodyguard. She doubted that he trusted many people. They reached another intersection, and Kaladin took longer to make this decision. She could see why. Down here, it was difficult to determine which way was which. The plateau formations were varied and erratic. Some were long and thin, others almost perfectly round. They had knobs and peninsulas off to their sides, and that made a maze of the twisted paths between them. It should have been easy. There were few dead ends, after all, and so they really just had to keep moving westward. But which direction was westward? It would be very, very easy to get lost down here. "You're not picking our course at random, are you?" she asked.
"No."
"You seem to know a lot about these chasms."
"I do."
"Because the gloomy atmosphere matches your disposition, I assume." He kept his eyes forward, walking without comment. "Storms," she said, hurrying to catch up. "That was supposed to be light-hearted. What would it take to make you relax, bridge boy?"
"I guess I'm just a... what was it again? A hateful man."
"I haven't seen any proof to the contrary."
"That's because you don't care to look, Light Eyes. Everyone beneath you is just a plaything."
"What?" she said, taking it like a slap to the face. "Where would you get that idea?"
"It's obvious."
"To whom? To you only? When have you seen me treat someone of a lesser station like a plaything? Give me one example."
"When I was imprisoned," he said immediately, "for doing what any Light Eyes would have been applauded for doing."
"And that was my fault?" she demanded.
"It's the fault of your entire class. Each time one of us is defrauded, enslaved, beaten, or broken, the blame rests upon all of you who support it, even indirectly."
"Oh, please," she said. The world isn't fair? What a huge revelation. Some people in power abuse those they have power over? Amazing! When did this start happening? He gave no reply. He tied his spheres to the top of his spear with a pouch formed from the white handkerchief he'd found on one of the scribes. Held high, it lit the chasm nicely for them. I think, she said, tucking away her own sphere for convenience, that you're just looking for excuses. Yes, you've been mistreated, I admit it. But I think you're the one who cares about eye color. That it's just easier for you to pretend that every light eyes is abusing you because of your status. Have you ever asked yourself if there's a simpler explanation? Could it be that people don't like you not because you're dark-eyed, but because you're just a huge pain in the neck? He snorted, then moved on more quickly. No, Shallan said, practically running to keep even with him in his long stride. You're not wiggling out of this. You don't get to imply that I'm abusing my station, then walk off without a response. You did this earlier with Adolin, now with me. What is your problem? You want a better example of you playing with people beneath you? Kaladin asked, dodging her question. Fine. You stole my boots. You pretended to be someone you weren't and bullied a dark-eyed guard you'd barely met. Is that a good enough example of you playing with someone you saw as beneath you? She stopped in her tracks. He was right there. She wanted to blame Tin's influence, but his comment cut the bite out of her argument. He stopped ahead of her, looking back. Finally, he sighed. Look, he said, I'm not holding a grudge about the boots. From what I've seen lately, you're not as bad as the others. So let's just leave it at that. Not as bad as the others? Shallan said, walking forward. What a delightful compliment. Well, let's say you're right. Perhaps I am an insensitive rich woman. That doesn't change the fact that you can be downright mean and offensive, Kaladin Stormblessed. He shrugged. That's it? She asked. I apologize and all I get in return is a shrug? I am what the Light Eyes have made me to be. So you're not culpable at all, she said flatly, for the way you act.
I'd say not.
Stormfather. I can't say anything to change the way you treat me, can I? You're just going to continue to be an intolerant, odious man full of spite, incapable of being pleasant around others. Your life must be very lonely. That seemed to get under his skin, as his face turned red in the sphere light.
I'm starting to revise my opinion, he said, of you not being as bad as the others.
Don't lie, she said. You've never liked me, right from the start, and not just because of the boots. I see how you watch me.
That's because, he said, I know you're lying through your smile at everyone you meet. The only time you seem honest is when you're insulting someone.
The only honest things I can say to you are insults.
Bah! He said. I just... Bah! Why is it that being around you makes me want to claw my face off, woman?
I have special training, she said, glancing to the side. And I collect faces. What was that?
You can't just...
He cut off as the scraping noise, echoing from one of the chasms, grew louder. Kaladin immediately put his hand over the improvised sphere lantern, plunging them into darkness. In Shallan's estimation, that did not help. She stumbled toward him in the darkness, grabbing his arm with her free hand. He was annoying, but he was also there. The scraping continued. A sound like rock on rock, or carapace on rock. I guess, she whispered nervously. Having a shouting match in an echoing network of chasms was not terribly wise.
Yeah.
It's getting closer, isn't it? She whispered.
Yeah.
So, run? The scraping seemed just beyond the next turn.
Yeah,
Kaladin said, pulling his hand off his spheres and charging away from the noise.
70. From a Nightmare.
Whether this was Tanavast's design or not, millennia have passed without Rays taking the life of another of the 16. While I mourn for the great suffering Rays has caused, I do not believe we could hope for a better outcome than this.
Caladan scrambled down the chasm, leaping branches and refuse, splashing through puddles. The girl kept up better than he'd expected, but, hampered by her dress, she was nowhere near as swift as he was. He held himself back, matching her pace. Exasperating though she might be, he wasn't going to abandon Adolin's betrothed to be eaten by a chasm fiend. They reached an intersection and chose a path at random. At the next intersection, he only paused long enough to check to see if they were being followed. They were. Thumping from behind them, claws on stone. Scraping. He grabbed the girl's satchel, he was already carrying her pack, as they ran down another corridor. Either Shallan was in excellent shape, or the panic got to her, because she didn't even seem winded when they reached the next intersection. No time for hesitation. He barreled down a pathway, ears full of the sound of grinding carapace. A sudden four-voiced trump echoed through the chasm, as loud as 1,000 horns being blown. Shallan screamed, though Caladan barely heard her over the horrible sound. The chasm plants withdrew in large waves. In moments, the entire place went from fecund to barren, like the world preparing for a high storm. They hit another intersection, and Shallan hesitated, looking back toward the sounds. She held her hands out as if preparing to embrace the thing. "Storming woman?" He grabbed her and pulled her after him. They ran down two chasms without stopping. It was still chasing, though he could only hear it. He had no idea how close it was, but it had their scent. Or their sound? He had no idea how they hunted. "Need a plan. Can't just..." At the next intersection, Shallan turned the opposite way from the one he had picked. Caladan cursed, pounding to a stop and running after her.
"This is no time," he said, puffing, "to argue about..." "Shut it," she said. "Follow."
She led them to an intersection, then another. Caladan was feeling winded, his lungs protesting. Shallan stopped, then pointed and ran down a chasm. He followed, looking over his shoulder. He could see only blackness. Moonlight was too distant, too choked to illuminate these depths. They wouldn't know if the beast was upon them until it entered the light of his spheres. But Stormfather, it sounded close. Caladan turned his attention back to his running. He nearly tripped over something on the ground. A corpse? He leaped it, catching up to Shallan. The hem of her dress was snarled and ripped from the running, her hair a mess, her face flushed. She led them down another corridor, then slowed to a stop, hand to the wall of the chasm, puffing. Caladan closed his eyes, breathing in and out.
"Can't rest long. It will be coming."
He felt as if he were going to collapse.
"Cover that light," Shallan hissed.
He frowned at her, but did so.
"We can't rest long," he hissed back. "Quiet."
The darkness was complete, save for the thin light escaping between his fingers. The scraping seemed almost on top of them. Storms, could he fight one of these monsters? Without stormlight? Desperate, he tried to suck in the light he held in his palm. No stormlight came, and he hadn't seen Syl since the fall. The scraping continued. He prepared to run, but... the sounds didn't seem to be getting closer anymore. Caladan frowned. The body he'd stumbled over, it had been one of the fallen from the fight earlier. Shallan had led them back to where they'd started. And to food for the beast. He waited, tense, listening to his heartbeat thumping in his chest. Scraping echoed in the chasm. Oddly, some light flashed in the chasm behind. What was that?
"Stay here," Shallan whispered.
Then, incredibly, she started to move toward the sounds. Still holding the spheres awkwardly with one hand, he reached out with the other and snatched her. She turned back to him, then looked down. Inadvertently, he grabbed her by the safe hand. He let go immediately.
"I have to see it," Shallan whispered to him. "We're so close."
"Are you insane?"
"Probably."
She continued toward the beast. Caladan debated, cursing her in his mind. Finally, he put his spear down and dropped her pack and satchel over its spheres to muffle the light.
Then he followed.
What else could he do? Explain to Adolin?
Yes, Princeling, I let your betrothed wander off alone in the darkness to get eaten by a chasm fiend. No, I didn't go with her. Yes, I'm a coward.
There was light ahead. It showed Shallan, her outline at least, crouching beside a turn in the chasm, peeking around. Kaladin stepped up to her, crouching down and taking a look.
There it was. The beast filled the chasm. Long and narrow, it wasn't bulbous or bulky like some small kremlings. It was sinuous, sleek, with that arrow-like face and sharp mandibles. It was also wrong. Wrong in a way difficult to describe. Big creatures were supposed to be slow and docile, like Chulls. Yet this enormous beast moved with ease, its legs up on the sides of the chasm, holding it so that its body barely touched the ground. It ate the corpse of a fallen soldier, grasping the body in smaller claws by its mouth, then ripping it in half with a gruesome bite. That face was like something from a nightmare. Evil, powerful, almost intelligent.
"Those Spren," Shallan whispered, so soft he could barely hear. "I've seen those."
They danced around the chasm fiend and were the source of the light. They looked like small glowing arrows, and they surrounded the beast in schools, though occasionally one would drift away from the others and then vanish like a small plume of smoke rising into the air.
"Sky eels," Shallan whispered. "They follow sky eels, too. The chasm fiend like corpses. Could its kind be carrion feeders by nature?" "No. Those claws, they look like they're meant for breaking shells. I suspect we'd find herds of wild chulls near where these things live naturally. But they come to the shattered plains to pupate, and here there's very little food, which is why they attack men. Why has this one remained after pupating?"
The chasm fiend was almost done with its meal. Kaladin took her by the shoulder, and she allowed him, with obvious reluctance, to pull her away. They returned to their things, gathered them up, and, as silently as possible, retreated farther into the darkness.
They walked for hours, going in a completely different direction from the one they'd taken before. Shallan allowed Kaladin to lead again, though she tried her best to keep track of the chasms. She'd need to draw it out to be certain of their location. Images of the chasm fiend tumbled in her head. What a majestic animal. Her fingers practically itched to sketch it from the memory she'd taken. The legs were larger than she'd imagined. Not like a legger, with spindly little spine-like legs holding up a thick body. This creature had exuded power, like the white spine, only enormous and more alien. They were far from it now. Hopefully that meant they were safe. The night was dragging on her, after she'd risen early to get moving on the expedition. She covertly checked the spheres in her pouch. She'd drained them all done in their flight. Bless the Almighty for the stormlight. She would need to make a glyph word in thanks. Without the strength and endurance it lent, she'd never have been able to keep up with Kaladin long legs. Now, however, she was storming exhausted, as if the light had inflated her capacity, but now left her deflated and worn out. At the next intersection, Kaladin paused and looked her over. She gave him a weak smile. "We'll need to stop for the night," he said. "Sorry." "It's not just you," he said, looking up at the sky. "I honestly have no idea if we're going the right direction or not. I'm all turned around. If we can get an idea in the morning of where the sun is rising, it will tell us which direction to walk." She nodded. "We should still be able to get back in plenty of time," he added. "No need to worry." The way he said it immediately made her start worrying. Still, she helped him find a relatively dry portion of ground, and they settled down, spheres in the center like a little mock fire. Kaladin dug in the pack she'd found, she'd taken it off a dead soldier, and came out with some rations of flat bread and dried chull jerky. Not the most appetizing of food by any stretch, but it was something. She sat with her back to the wall and ate, looking upward. The flatbread was from soul-cast grain. That stale taste was obvious. Clouds above prevented her from seeing the stars, but some starspren moved in front of those, forming distant patterns. "It's strange," she whispered as Kaladin ate. "I've only been down here half a night, but it feels like so much longer. The tops of the plateaus seem so distant, don't they?" He grunted. "Ah, yes," she said. "The Bridgeman grunt. A language unto itself. I'll need to go over the morphemes and tones with you. I'm not quite fluent yet."
"You'd make a terrible Bridgeman."
"Too short?"
"Well, yes. And too female. I doubt you'd look good in the traditional short trousers and open vest. Or rather, you'd probably look too good. It might be a little distracting for the other Bridgemen."
She smiled at that, digging into her satchel and pulling out her sketchbook and pencils. At least she had fallen with those. She started sketching, humming softly to herself and stealing one of the spheres for light. Patterns still lay on her skirts, content to be silent in Kaladin's presence.
"Storms," Kaladin said. "You're not drawing a picture of you wearing one of those outfits."
"Yes, of course," she said. "I'm drawing salacious pictures of myself for you after only a few hours together in the chasm." She scratched at a line. "You have quite the imagination, Bridge Boy."
"Well, it's what we were talking about," he grumbled,
rising and walking over to look at what she was doing.
"I thought you were tired."
"I'm exhausted," she said. "So I need to relax."
"Obviously."
This first sketch wouldn't be the chasm fiend. She needed a warm-up. So she drew their path through the chasms. A map, kind of, but more a picture of the chasms as if she could see them from above. It was imaginative enough to be interesting, though she was certain she got a few of the ridges and corners wrong.
"What is that?" Kaladin asked. "A picture of the plains?"
"Something of a map," she said, though she grimaced. What did it say about her that she couldn't just draw a few lines giving their location like a regular person? She had to do it like a picture. "I don't know the full shapes of the plateaus we walked around, just the chasm pathways we used."
"You remember it that well?"
"Stormwinds." Hadn't she intended to keep her visual memory more secret than this? No, not really. I'm guessing at a lot of this." She felt foolish for revealing her skill. Vale would have had words with her. It was too bad Vale wasn't down here, actually. She would be better at this whole surviving in the wilderness thing. Kaladin took the picture from her fingers, standing up and using his sphere to light it.
"Well, if your map is correct, we've been making our way southward instead of westward. I need light to navigate better."
"Perhaps," she said, taking out another sheet to begin her sketch of the chasm fiend.
"We'll wait for the sun tomorrow," he said. "That will tell me which way to go."
She nodded, beginning a sketch as he made a place for himself and settled down, coat folded into a pillow. She wanted to turn in herself, but this sketch would not wait. She at least had to get something down. She only lasted about a half hour, finishing perhaps a quarter of the sketch, before she had to put it away, curl up on the hard ground with the pack as a pillow, and fall asleep. It was still dark when Kaladin nudged her awake with the butt of his spear. Shallan groaned, rolling over on the chasm floor, and drowsily tried to put her pillow over her head, which of course spilled dried chul meat onto her. Kaladin chuckled. Sure, that got a laugh out of him. Storming man. How long had she been able to sleep? She blinked bleary eyes and focused on the open crack of the chasm far above. Nope, not a single glimmer of light. 2, perhaps 3 hours of sleep then? Or rather, sleep. The definition of what she'd done was debatable. She'd probably have called it tossing and turning on the rocky ground, occasionally waking with a start to find that she'd drooled a small puddle. That didn't really roll off the tongue, though. unlike the aforementioned drool. She sat up and stretched sore limbs, checking to make sure her sleeve hadn't come unbuttoned in the night, or anything equally embarrassing. "I need a bath," she grumbled.
"A bath?" Kaladin asked. "You have only been away from civilization for one day," she sniffed.
"Just because you're accustomed to the stench of unwashed bridgeman does not mean I need to join in." He smirked, taking a piece of dried chell meat from her shoulder and popping it in his mouth.
"In my hometown growing up, bath day was once a week. I think even the local light eyes would have found it strange that everyone out here, even the common soldiers, finds a bath more frequently."
How dare he be this chipper in the morning? Or rather, the morning. She threw another piece of chell meat at him when he wasn't looking. The storming man caught it. I hate him.
"We didn't get eaten by that chasm fiend while we slept," he said, refilling the pack save for a single water skin. "I'd say that was about as much a blessing as we could expect, under the circumstances. Come on, up on your toes. Your map gives me an idea of which way to go, and we can watch for sunlight to make certain we're on the right path. We want to beat that high storm, right?"
"You're the one I want to beat," she grumbled, "with a stick."
"What was that?"
"Nothing," she said, standing up and trying to make something of her frazzled hair. "Storms. She must look like the after effect of a lightning bolt hitting a jar of red ink." She sighed. She didn't have a brush, and he didn't look like he was going to give her time for a proper braid, so she put on her boots. Wearing the same pair of socks 2 days in a row was the least of her indignities, and picked up her satchel. Kaladin carried the pack. She trailed after him as he led the way through the chasm, her stomach complaining about how little she'd eaten the night before. Food didn't sound good, so she let it growl. "Serves it right," she thought, whatever that meant. Eventually, the sky did start to brighten, and from a direction that indicated that they were going the right way. Kaladin fell into his customary quiet, and his chipper mien from earlier in the morning evaporated. Instead, he looked like he was consumed by difficult thoughts. She yawned, pulling up beside him. "What are you thinking about?"
"I was considering how nice it was to have a little silence," he said, "with nobody bothering me."
"Liar. Why do you try so hard to put people off?"
"Maybe I just don't want to have another argument."
"You won't," she said, yawning again. "It's far too early for arguments. Try it. Give me an insult."
"I don't
insult. Now.
I'd rather walk these chasms with a compulsive murderer than you. At least then when the conversation got tedious, I'd have an easy way out."
"And your feet stink," she said. "See, too early. I can't possibly be witty at this hour. So no arguments." She hesitated, then continued more softly. "Besides, no murderer would agree to accompany you. Everyone needs to have some standards, after all." Kaladin snorted, lips tugging up to the sides. "Be careful," she said, hopping over a fallen log. That was almost like a smile. "And earlier this morning I could swear that you were cheerful. Well, mildly content. Anyway, if you start to be in a better mood, it will destroy the whole variety of this trip."
"Variety?" he asked.
"Yes. If we're both pleasant, there's no artistry to it. You see, great art is a matter of contrast. Some lights and some darks. The happy, smiling, radiant lady, and the dark, brooding, malodorous bridgeman."
"That..."
he stopped.
"Malodorous?"
"A great figure painting," she said, "shows the hero with inherent contrast, strong yet hinting at vulnerability so that the viewer can relate to him. Your little problem would make for a dynamic contrast."
"How would you even convey that in a painting?" Kaladin said, frowning. "Besides, I'm not malodorous."
"Oh, so you're getting better? Yay!" He looked at her, dumbfounded. "Confusion," she said. I will graciously take that as a sign that you're amazed that I can be so humorous at such an early hour. She leaned in conspiratorially, whispering, I'm really not very witty. You just happen to be stupid, so it seems that way. Contrast, remember? She smiled at him, then continued on her way, humming to herself. Actually, the day was looking much better. Why had she been in a bad mood earlier? Kaladin jogged to catch up with her. Storms, woman, he said. I don't know what to make of you. Preferably not a corpse. I'm surprised someone hasn't already done that. He shook his head. Give me an honest answer. Why are you here?
Well, there was this bridge that collapsed, and I fell...
He sighed.
Sorry, Shallan said. Something about you encourages me to crack wise, bridge boy. Even in the morning. Anyway, why did I come here? You mean to the Shattered Plains in the first place?
He nodded. There was a sort of rugged handsomeness to the fellow. Like the beauty of a natural rock formation, as opposed to a fine sculpture like Adolin. But Kaladin's intensity, that frightened her. He seemed like a man who constantly had his teeth clenched. A man who couldn't let himself or anyone else just sit down and take a nice rest. I came here, Shallan said, because of Jasnah Kolin's work. The scholarship she left behind must not be abandoned.
And Adolin?
Adolin is a delightful surprise. They passed an entire wall covered in draping vines that were rooted in a broken section of rock above. They wriggled and pulled up as Shallan passed. Very alert, she noted. Faster than most vines. These were the opposite of those in the gardens back home, where the plants had been sheltered for so long. She tried to snatch one for a cutting, but it moved too quickly. Drat. She needed a bit of one so that when they got back she could grow a plant for experimentation. Pretending she was here to explore and record new species helped push back the gloom. She heard Pattern humming softly from her skirt, as if he realized what she was doing, distracting herself from the predicament and the danger. She swatted at him. What would the bridgeman think if he heard her clothing buzz? Just a moment, she said, finally snatching one of the vines. Kaladin watched, leaning on his spear, as she cut the tip off the vine with the small knife from her satchel.
Jasnah's research, he said. It had something to do with structures hidden out here beneath the Krem.
What makes you say that? She tucked the tip of the vine away in an empty ink jar she'd kept for specimens.
You made too much of an effort to get out here, he said. Ostensibly all to investigate a chasm fiend's chrysalis. A dead one, even. There has to be more.
You don't understand the compulsive nature of scholarship, I see.
She shook the jar.
He snorted.
If you'd really wanted to see a chrysalis, you could have just had them tow one back for you. They have those chul sleds for the wounded. One of those might have worked. There was no need for you to come all the way out here yourself.
Blast! A solid argument. It was a good thing Adolin hadn't thought of that. The prince was wonderful, and he certainly wasn't stupid, but he was also mentally direct. This bridge man was proving himself different. The way he watched her, the way he thought, even, she realized, the way he spoke. He talked like an educated light eyes, but what of those slave brands on his forehead? The hair got in the way, but she thought that one of them was a shash brand. Perhaps she should spend as much time wondering about this man's motives as he apparently fretted about hers.
Riches, he said as they continued on.
He held back some dead branches sticking from a crack so she could pass.
There's a treasure of some sort out here, and that's what you seek? But no, you could have wealth easily enough by marriage.
She didn't say anything, stepping through the gap he made for her.
Nobody had heard of you before this, he continued. The DeVar house really does have a daughter your age, and you match the description.
You could be an imposter, but you're actually light-eyed, and that Vaden House isn't particularly significant. If you were going to bother to impersonate someone, wouldn't you pick someone more important?
You seem to have thought about this a great deal.
It's my job.
I'm being truthful with you. Yasna's research is why I came to the Shattered Plains. I think the world itself could be in danger.
That's why you talked to Adolin about the Parshmen.
Wait. How do you... Your guards were there on that terrace with us.
They told you?
I didn't realize they were close enough to listen.
I made a point of telling them to stay close, Kaladin said. At the time I was half convinced you were here to assassinate Adolin.
Well, he was nothing if not honest and blunt.
My men said, Kaladin continued, that you seemed to want to get the Parshmen murdered.
I said nothing of the sort, she said, though I am worried that they might betray us. It's a moot point, as I doubt I'll persuade the High Princes without more evidence.
If you got your way, though, Kaladin said, sounding curious, what would you do? About the Parshmen?
Have them exiled, Shallan said.
And who would replace them? Kaladin said. Dark Eyes?
I'm not saying it would be easy, Shallan said.
They'd need more slaves, Kaladin said, contemplative. A lot of honest men might find themselves with brands.
Still sore about what happened to you, I assume.
Wouldn't you be?
Yes, I suppose I would. I am sorry that you were treated in such a way, but it could have been worse. You could have been hanged.
I wouldn't have wanted to be the executioner who tried that.
He said it with a quiet intensity. Me neither, Shallan said. I think hanging people is a poor choice of professions for an executioner. Better to be the guy with an axe. He frowned at her. You see, she said, with the axe, it's easier to get ahead.
He stared.
Then after a moment he winced.
Oh, Storms, that was awful.
No, it was funny. You seem to get those two mixed up a lot. Don't worry, I'm here to help.
He shook his head. It's not that you aren't witty, Shallan. I just feel like you try too hard. The world is not a sunny place, and frantically trying to turn everything into a joke is not going to change that.
Technically, she said, it is a sunny place half the time.
To people like you, perhaps, Kaladin said.
What does that mean? He grimaced.
Look, I don't want to fight again, all right? I just... Please, let's let the topic drop.
What if I promise not to get angry?
Are you capable of that?
Of course. I spend most of my time not being angry. I'm terribly proficient at it. Most of those times aren't around you, granted, but I think I'll be all right.
You're doing it again, he said.
Sorry. They walked in silence for a moment, passing plants in bloom with a shockingly well-preserved skeleton underneath them, somehow barely disturbed by the flowing of water in the chasm.
All right, Kaladin said. Here it is. I can imagine how the world must appear to someone like you, growing up pampered with everything you want. To someone like you, life is wonderful and sunny and worth laughing over. That's not your fault, and I shouldn't blame you. You haven't had to deal with pain or death like I have. Sorrow is not your companion.
Silence. Shallan didn't reply. How could she reply to that?
What? Kaladin finally asked.
I'm trying to decide how to react, Shallan said. You see, you just said something very, very funny.
Then why aren't you laughing?
Well, it isn't that kind of funny. She handed him her satchel and stepped onto a small dry rise of rock running through the middle of a deep pond on the chasm floor. The ground was usually flat, all of that creme settling, but the water in this pool looked a good 2 or 3 feet deep. She crossed with hands out to the sides, balancing. So, let me see, she said as she stepped carefully. You think I've lived a simple, happy life full of sunshine and joy, but you also imply that I've got dark, evil secrets.
So you're suspicious of, and even hostile to me. You tell me I'm arrogant and assume that I consider Dark Eyes to be playthings. But when I tell you what I'm trying to do to protect them and everyone else, you imply I'm meddling and should just leave well enough alone. She reached the other side and turned about. Would you say that's an accurate summary of our conversations up to this point? Kaladin Stormblessed. He grimaced.
Yes, I suppose.
Wow, she said. You sure do seem to know me well. Particularly considering that you started this conversation by professing that you don't know what to make of me. An odd statement from someone who seems, from my perspective, to have figured it all out. Next time I'm trying to decide what to do, I'll just ask you, since you appear to understand me better than I understand myself. He crossed the same ridge of rock in the path, and she watched anxiously as he was carrying her satchel. She trusted him better with it over the water than she trusted herself, though. She reached for it when he arrived on the other side, but found herself taking his arm to draw his attention. How about this? She said, holding his eyes. I promise, solemnly and by the 10th name of the Almighty, that I mean no harm to Adolin or his family. I mean to prevent a disaster. I might be wrong and I might be misguided, but I vow to you that I'm sincere. He stared into her eyes. So intense. She felt a shiver meeting that expression. This was a man of passion.
I believe you, he said. And I guess that will do.
He looked upward, then cursed. What? She asked, looking toward the distant light above. The sun was peeking out over the lip of the ridge there. The wrong ridge. They weren't going west any longer. They'd strayed again, pointing southward. Blast, Shallan said. Give me that satchel. I need to draw this out.
71. Vigil. He bears the weight of God's own divine hatred, separated from the virtues that gave it context. He is what we made him to be, old friend, and that is what he, unfortunately, wished to become.
I was young, Teft said, so I didn't hear much. Kalek, I didn't want to hear much. The things my family did, they weren't the sort of things you want your parents doing, all right? I didn't want to know, so it's not surprising I can't remember.
Sigzil nodded in that mild yet infuriating way of his. The Azish man just knew things, and he made you tell him things, too. Unfair, that was. Terribly. Why did Teft have to end up with him on watch duty? The two sat on rocks near the chasms just east of Dalinar's war camp. A cold wind blew in. High storm tonight.
He'll be back before then. Surely by then.
A Kremling scuttled past. Teft threw a rock at it, driving it toward a nearby crack.
I don't know why you want to hear all of these things anyway. They aren't any use.
Sigzil nodded. Storming foreigner.
All right, fine, Teft said. It was some kind of cult, you see, called the Envisagers. They thought if they could find a way to return the Voidbringers, then the Knights Radiant would return as well. Stupid, right? Only they knew things. Things they shouldn't. Things like what Kaladin can do.
I see this is hard for you, Sigzil said. Want to play another hand of Mitchum to pass the time instead?
You just want my storming spheres,
Teft snapped, wagging his finger at the Azish man.
And don't call it by that name.
Mitchum is the game's actual name.
That's a holy word, and ain't no game named a holy word.
The word isn't holy where it came from,
Sigzil said, obviously annoyed.
We ain't there now, are we? Call it something else.
I thought you'd like it,
Sigzil said, picking up the colored rocks that were used in the game. You bet them in a pile while trying to guess the ones your opponent had hidden.
It's a game of skill, not chance. So it doesn't offend Vorin's sensibilities.
Teft watched him pick up the rocks. Maybe it would be better if he just lost all of his spears in that storming game. It wasn't good for him to have money again. He couldn't be trusted with money.
They thought, Teft said, that people were more likely to manifest powers if their lives were in danger. So, they'd put lives in danger. Members of their own group, never an innocent outsider, bless the winds, but that was bad enough. I watched people let themselves be pushed off cliffs, watched them tied in place with a candle slowly burning a rope until it snapped and dropped a rock to crush them. It was bad, Sigzil. Awful. The sort of thing nobody should have to watch, especially a boy of 6.
So, what did you do?
Sigzil asked softly, pulling tight the string on his little bag of rocks.
Ain't none of your business, Teft said. Don't know why I'm even talking to you.
It's all right, Sigzil said. I can see.
I turned them in, Teft blurted out. To the city lord. He held a trial for them, a big one. Had them all executed in the end. Never did understand that. They were only a danger to themselves. Their punishment for threatening suicide was to be killed. Nonsense, that is. Should have found a way to help them.
Your parents?
Mother died in that rock string contraption, Teft said. She really believed, Sig, that she had it in her, you know? The powers? That if she were about to die, they'd come out in her and she'd save herself?
And you watched?
Storms, no. You think they'd let her son watch that? Are you mad?
But...
Did watch my father die, though, Teft said, looking out over the plains. Hanged.
He shook his head, digging in his pocket. Where had he put that flask? As he turned, however, he caught sight of that other lad sitting back there, fiddling with his little box as he often did. Renarin. Teft wasn't one for all that nonsense like Moash had talked about, wanting to overturn Light Eyes. The Almighty had put them in their place,